Abhyayantu mamangani vakranaschakshushrotram atho phalindriyani cha sarvani sarvam brahma upanishadam maham brahma nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakarnam Astu Anirakarnam Me Astu Taratmani Nirate Yirapanishat Sudharmaste Mai Santu Te Mai Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti
Let's go to chapter 4, verse 4. Asyaisha adeshaha. Wait a minute. Go lower. I don't have any voice. Asyaisha adeshaha.
Tasyaisha adeshaha
yaretad vidyutaha
yaretad vidyutaha
vidyutada
vidyutada
itin
itin
nyamimishada
nyamimishada
ityati daivatam
ityati daivatam.
We worked on this some yesterday, but I'm going to take it a little deeper today. Let me do the Sunday. Tasya eshaha.
Tasya eshaha.
Adeshaha.
Adeshaha.
Yet etat.
Yet etat.
Vidyutaha.
Vidyutaha.
Vidyutada.
Vidyutada.
That actually is going to be Vidyutad ah. Vidyutad ah. That long ah, it's actually three mantras long, you know, and it means like Eva. Okay. It has different meanings in this context, it means like or Eva. So, Vidyutad ah, and then iti it. Iti. Do you see where it says itin? Itin. That's actually two unusual words. It, not iti, but it. It. And that it turns to in because of the following na. So you get a double na there. So it's iti, it. And it means cha, and here in this context. So iti, it, nyami mishat, ah. Nya, I'm going to steal it. Nyami mishat.
Nyami mishat.
Nyami mishat.
Nyami mishat.
Ah.
Ah.
It actually, somebody said it right. I think it was you, Kosh. You said it right. I didn't. it should be nyami mishat. Shat. Nyami mishat. Ah. Okay. Iti. Adidaivatam. Okay. So just follow along. Tesya eshaha, you don't have to repeat. Tesya eshaha adeshaha yet etet vidyutaha vidyutet a iti it nyaminishet a iti adidaivatam. Okay? So, having told the story about Agni, Vayu, and Indra approaching the Yaksha, so having told the story, and this story, which is meant to, it's a story about gaining knowledge of Brahman. That's what the story, whole story is about. But it's about gaining the knowledge of Brahman from the standpoint of the devas. So that would be adidaivitam. Remember we had adhyatmam, and then we had adibhutam or adibhautikam and adhyatmam. So that adi means that it's centered on. So here the story that we had is centered on the devas. So it's adidaivikam. Okay? So here, acknowledging that, he ends with iti adidaivatam. The next verse, if you notice, the next verse starts with atadhyatmam. So the first is going to be the teaching, and this teaching, based upon the story, is going to be an adesha. An adesha, the normal word that we use for teaching in terms of the guru-sisha relationship, is upadesha. We use this word all of the time, upadesha. Okay. Adesha is also means teaching, but it also means teaching with the use of an upama. An upama is like an analogy or an example. So an example for a comparison. And so here an adesha is being used, that it is using the example, which is in reference to this knowledge that being unfolded to the devatas, as we saw in the story. This particular adesha, the teaching, if you say like this, tasya eshaha adeshaha, eshaha adeshaha, this teaching, tasya of that, of what? Of that story in which Brahman is revealed. So you can say this teaching of Brahman, or this teaching of the one who is the ear of the ear, or this teaching that was, this is an adesha of the teaching which was revealed in the story. All of these things are okay. So tasya could be just of Brahman, of the Atma that was revealed as the ear of the ear, the eye of the eye of the eye. But in the end, it amounts to this teaching of that which was revealed. So esha, tasya just literally means of that. Eshaha, adeshaha, this teaching. Of that one, that actually the Pratyagatma, who is revealed as Brahman, the innermost self. Why say that is tasya is masculine? Tasya, that can be neuter also. So tasya, eshaha, adeshaha, this teaching of Brahman, this teaching of the Pratyagatma, this teaching of the one, ear of the ear, eye of the eye, mind of the mind. All of it has to do with the identity of this innermost being. Being this Pratyagatma, this self that is me, the self-evident self, as being Brahman. Okay, that's the whole teaching. So from the standpoint of the story, which it was adidaivatam. So then it says, what is the adesha? What is the comparison? What is this teaching being compared to? Yed eted, so it says this, yed eted vidyutaha vidyutad vidyutat a. A means, a is the comparison. So the gaining knowledge of Brahman, or Brahman is like, you could say like this, a is like vidyutad. Here in this sense means a flash, vidyutaha, a flash of lightning. Okay, so this gaining of the knowledge of Brahman, the recognition of Brahman, you can say, is like a flash of lightning. Okay, good. Thus, it and yamimishat, it is like that ah, it is like the blinking of the eye. It's like the blinking of the eye. Okay. So those are the examples. It's like a flash of lightning, and it's like the blink of the eye. Okay. So, iti adidaivatam. First of all, Brahman is not like a flash of lightning, because a flash of lightning is something that we can objectify. Brahman cannot be objectified. So now we have to remember the story. How could this knowledge or this recognition of Brahman be like a flash of lightning for the devatas? Okay, and how? And the idea of blinking also is adidaivatam. These two examples go together. It's like a flash of lightning, and it's like the blinking of the eye. Okay? So a couple of things we have to remember in the story. Agni was the first one. This yaksha appeared in the distance. None of the three, there were more devas too, but Agni, Vayu, and Indra, what is that? And they should have known. After all, for Agni, all of the rituals, Agni is the messenger to all of the devatas. If a ritual is done, all of the things that are offered to the deity or to the devata are carried by Agni up to the devata. And so he should at least know. Indra is the god of all, is the lord of all of the devatas. He should certainly know who that yaksha is. And Vayu, like the wind, he travels unobstructed, with no obstruction, everywhere in the creation. He certainly should have run across this yaksha. And so all of them recognize that this yaksha that they're seeing there, nobody knows who that is. Nobody knows. And so they decide to send Agni, you know, all the devas look and say, Agni, you go, because after all, you know, all of the offerings, you take them to everybody, you should know. Can you please go find out who that yaksha is? So Agni goes. But when Agni goes there, he comes very near to that yaksha, this celestial being that nobody has ever seen, that has no prior history, we can say. It has just really appeared. So this yaksha that nobody can place anywhere has appeared. And so, but what does Agni do is he goes up to the yaksha and immediately is wanting just to ask, as he's been asked to ask, who are you? But before he gets a chance to do anything, the yaksha instead says to him, who are you? You know? So that is going to reveal how Agni answers that question. Reveals quite a bit. He says, you know, I am Agni. I'm so well known. That's a giveaway right there. I'm Agni. I'm so well known. There's no mumukshu in that. There's no, who am I? He didn't come and then the yaksha says, who are you? And he says, that's why I'm here. I don't know who I am. I want to gain that knowledge. That would be a mumukshu, right? So he's coming to this yaksha, but that's not anywhere near. That's not in his mind at all. So his idea is to come with a who are you question, right? Explain yourself to me. So, but no, the yaksha, who is really Brahman, because Brahman taking this form of the yaksha in order to teach them. Actually, all these devas have a lot of punya, you know, and he's fond of them. And so he wants to give them a little lesson, teach them a little lesson, because they've all been bragging so much about their victory, you know, and being praised by all the other devas also about their victory and how they were able to do this and how great they are. They were given all types of accolades, and they accepted all of those and just became puffier and puffier and puffier, All the while, Brahman, in the form of as Ishwara, you know, was very aware of the victory poem. I'm the only one here, really. This is my victory. You're not even acknowledging, you know, that you really get all of your power and all of your capacity only from me, and yet there's not any notice of that whatsoever. Right? And so it's Brahman, Ishwara, that appears as an avatar. This is why Swamiji brings out this thing, avatar. He appears as an avatar because there's no past karma. He just takes that. It's pratibhasika for Ishwara, actually. There's a discussion. You know, pratibhasika is subjective. So the whole Ishwara upadhi has this pratibhasika, the subjective from Ishwara's standpoint, which is not going to be subjective from them. They're going to share it, but from Ishwara it's considered subjective because no karma involved. It's just an appearance. So he appears as this yaksha for a purpose. He knows each one of these. He knows Agni. He knows Vayu. He knows Indra very well. He knows what they're all about, as it said in this story, and what their needs are. So for Agni, before Agni can say anything, he asks, who are you? I am Agni. I'm the well-known Agni. I am the one who's called Jataveda. I bring so much wealth to everybody who worships me. I am the giver, Jataveda. I'm the giver of so much wealth and other meanings. Okay? I'm the well-known Jataveda. Yeah? And then the yaksha responds, well, how, you know, what is your viryam? What is the viryam? What is your capacity? What is your strength? What are you, viryam, what is your strength? What is it that you're actually able to do? You know, what do you represent? What are you able to do? Where is your strength? Where's the strength in you? Tasmin mayi toyi, in you who are like this, as you describe the great Agni, you know. And he says, Agni answers, I can, in appropriate situations, whatever the situation is called for, you know, I can burn anything on this earth. I can burn it to ashes, just like that, anything on the earth, anywhere actually. I can burn it to ashes when the situation warrants that. That's what I can do. Okay, so now his puffiness is all there, all revealed, you know, because I'm the one who can do this. This is my strength, my viryam. It's because he introduced himself like that. I have these capacities. This is my strength. This is, everybody knows me so well. So she said, well, what is your viryam? I can blow everything to, I can burn everything on the earth. And so, so now he's revealed himself as a devata who has so much strength and power, but who also, at this point in his maturing, is just a total samsari, basically. It's a total samsari because I am the great Agni, and these are the things I can do, you know, and these are my powers. So he is telling, that's how he's defining himself. The who are you question, I'm the great Agni, I have these powers and these capacities, I can burn the whole earth. And so now the yaksha, who you have to remember is Brahman, is Ishwara, who knows Agni inside and out, will say, okay, and sets down this little thing in front of him and says, let me see you burn that. You will just burn that, please. Please burn that for me. And Agni has no doubt, because that's his viryam. This is the idea. This is his strength that he has, belongs to him. He can definitely, without any problem, burn that to a crisp instantaneously. So it just sets his flames right upon that little piece of grass, and blows with the, I mean, shoots his flame, sits on it. Swamiji makes a joke of the whole thing. Sits on it, burns, tries. Absolutely nothing happens. And that doesn't, it's interesting, that doesn't really humble Agni. It more humiliates him, you know. So what does he do? He just, from this embarrassing situation, he just pulls back quickly and goes back to the devatas, to Indra and to Vayu, and says, I wasn't able to find out who the yaksha was. He said, okay, Vayu, you go. So they asked, you go and try. Because Vayu actually also has a lot of capacity. He can travel all over the universe, the winds, as the wind. And so he says, so be it. And he goes, and the same situation happens. He goes, he's going to ask the yaksha, who are you? Right? Who are you? And before he can do that, the yaksha says, who are you? Yeah. I am Vayu, you know, Matarishwa, the one who can travel without obstruction all over the universe, you know, all over the space. I can travel anywhere at any time. I can blow anything up as needed. I can lift anything in the creation. I can lift it up and carry it off. That's what he says. And then with all these Vayas, I am, as you know, the well-known Vayu. I'm very well known. I'm surprised you don't recognize me. I'm very well known. I'm also very well known as Matarishwa. And so then the yaksha says, well, you who are like this with so much strength, so much power, you know, being able to lift anything up in the creation, you are like this, you know, and she puts that again down, okay? No, or he puts it down, the little blade of grass, and asks, please, you know, please carry this off. And so Vayu comes with all his strength and cannot move it. He's also humiliated, you know, because I'm the great Vayu. I can do this. There is no problem. Please, then, move this little blade of grass. He blows and blows. It would be embarrassing, you know. He blows and blows and blows. He's already bragged about himself and, you know, the strength and so much pride. Okay, he should just be, should go. Nothing happens at all. Nothing happens. So what does he do? He kind of, you know, puts his tail between his legs and kind of quickly just goes back to the group. I don't know who that, I was unable to find out who the yaksha was. That's what he says, you know. And of course, as Swamiji would always joke, you know, who looks at each other. But the two humiliated ones, Agni and Vayu, kind of look like, let's not say anything about this. This is kind of embarrassing, and this is an insult to our powers, our capacities. We're just quiet. And then they just look to Indra, you know, who's really the lord of all of the sense organs and karmendriyas and everything. He's the mind. He's the lord of the mind, really. So they send Indra. Now, Indra is different than the other two. And so this story really kind of recognizes the lack of being, these two are not adhikaris. They're not adhikaris because they came as samsaris. They came to the yaksha as a samsari and they have a subject-object relationship with this yaksha, you know. They don't know the yaksha is Ishwara, but even with Ishwara they would also, because they're not adhikaris, they would still have a subject-object relationship with Ishwara and they would see Ishwara, this is your infinite form and we are serving you. We have taken this birth in order to handle all of the, whatever the laws are that we govern. We govern, Vayu governs the wind, internally and externally. So that's a big position that he's been granted by Ishwara. Ishwara is out here and Ishwara has granted me this position of being the devata, the lord, you know, of all Vayu, internally and externally. Agni is the same. Ishwara is out here. The yaksha is out here. This is who I am. Who are you? You know? Indra's response was different. He agreed. They asked him to go. You go, please, Indra. It's your turn. You know, maybe you can find out who the yaksha is. Indra goes, okay, and as he approaches, looking. So here's the yaksha. He's approaching, looking at the yaksha. And as he looks, the yaksha disappears. The form completely disappears. And so now the form having disappeared, we would say Indra is not humiliated, he is humbled. That's different. He recognizes that let's put it this way, what does he want to know about the yaksha? That's the thing. What does he, when he wants to go and find out who the yaksha is, does he want to find out the yaksha's place in the universe or the powers of the yaksha or what domain that yaksha is coming from? Of all of the heavens, there's seven heavens up, you know. Where is the yaksha coming from? What is his home? You know, what are his powers? What is his responsibilities? Like with Agni and Vayu, it's like, these are my powers, these are my responsibilities, and I have overarching control of anything that can be burnt. I have overarching control of all of the winds. I can do the wind, I can do anything. That's my power. What's yours? Who are you? What can you do? You know? And so that's just a powerful devata meeting up with an unknown devata, a yaksha, a celestial being who is also very, because yaksha means somebody that is puja. Puja means that which is draws you to it. And so this isn't an ordinary yaksha, but here I am, this person with all of these capacities, coming to find out what you're doing here. What are you doing here? What is your job? Who are you in the world? Who are you in the world? Whereas, as the story goes, that was not Indra's question. Indra, in approaching the deva, in the yaksha, wanting to know, who are you? Means, who are you really? And you can see different reasons for that, because Indra, kind of as the king or the lord of all of the devatas, knows. I'm just surmising this, but it's kind of included in the story. He knows that this form, this yaksha, is not from here. This yaksha is brilliant, you know, brilliant in drawing us to him. So he's not asking, what's your place in this universe? He's asking, who are you? Who are you really? What is your nature? What is your, as Swamiji say, what is your swarupa? What is your nature? Not your place in the universe. Like, I am Agni or I am Vayu. What are you doing? It's not that at all. It's who are you really, you know? And so, with that question in mind, so remember, this is Brahman, this is Ishwara appearing as the, Ishwara is Brahman. Brahman with the whole Maya Upadhi. When Indra approaches, he's approaching the yaksha really to know who is the self of the yaksha. That's interesting. So he wants, it's also impossible. It's a very interesting question. Who is yourself? What is your real nature? Who are you really? But to find that out, who are you really, Indra would have to be able to objectify Brahman. So what happens, which is not possible, say if I ask you, who are you? That's much different than asking you, who am I? Right? So if I ask you, who are you, then are you going to be able to pull out your swarupa, your nature as Brahman, and show it to me? Who are you? Oh, here, you know, I'm Brahman. What is that going to do? Brahman's got no form at all. And so how is this yaksha going to handle that, right? Because his question is correct. What he's searching for is correct. But of course, without self-knowledge, none of the sense organs nor the mind can answer this question. In fact, the very famous verse is, Brahman is that from which the speech and the mind return, having not known. It's a famous verse. Having not gained that, they return empty-handed. And so now, so when Indra approaches the yaksha with this question, which of course the who are you question, which Ishwara understands the difference between Indra's approach and Agni and Vayu's approach. It's totally different. The other two are still, they're still contained in the samsara, and they're just looking for an explanation of where do you come from, who are you, what are your capacities. These are ours. But Indra's not approaching with that. So what does Brahman do as the yaksha? As Indra approaches, he disappears like a blink. So what does that do now in the story? In terms of the verse, he disappears like that. So the example is this. And then we'll go back to the story. Brahman, you know, Brahman is something which used as an analogy is like a flash of lightning. What is a flash of lightning? Brahman isn't a flash of lightning. Right. Because a flash of lightning is objectifiable. You could say, well, is Brahman brilliant like a flash of lightning? Or is Brahman something that flashes with great intensity for a moment like a flash of lightning? Not at all. Brahman's not something that can be objectified like a flash of lightning. So the flash of lightning isn't an example of Brahman, right? So what would the flash of lightning be? So Swamiji, the Bhashas do this in some different ways. I'll do them in all ways. But the way that Swamiji does this one is when a flash of lightning takes place, you know, just imagine the bright light, your eyes immediately close. Your eyes blink. The lightning comes, your eyes blink, because the eyes have to just naturally protect themselves. No. So there's a twofold example. There's a flash of lightning. Brahman is like a flash of lightning and the blinking of the eyes. Okay. So now we have to contemplate on what that would be, like the flash of lightning with the blinking of the eyes. Okay. A flash of lightning is something that appears and disappears. It doesn't have a prior. There's no prior situation, right? So it's not about the birth or the coming into being of the flash of lightning and then the going out of the being. You can just look at the flash of lightning as something that appears and disappears. And when it appears, your eyes shut, okay? So now think of it like this. Look at the yaksha for a minute as the flash of lightning. Say the flash of lightning takes place and your eyes shut. These two things happen, okay? You have the form, when that happens, just think of the vritti. A vritti takes place, but then the content of the vritti goes away, right? So you have a vritti, flash of lightning vritti. The vritti takes place, flash of lightning vritti takes place, and it's gone. When it's gone with the closing of the eyes, you know, it'll go on its own, but they use this nimisha. We can use it, we'll use it separately too, but just think of this. What has the whole Upanishad been teaching? You are the eye of the eye, you know. You're the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the prana of the prana. All of that is to make clear in so many ways in the Upanishad is that your being itself is not objectifiable. None of my sense organs nor the mind can objectify your being, right? It can objectify your being as an object. That is not possible because you're the final subject. There's no one behind you. So what are you? You are the self of the mind, the mind of the mind. What does that mean? You are the conscious being, that which is both, that which is the knownness of the vritti. If you remember this viditat, adi, and the student says to the teacher, it is known, I consider that Brahman is known to me. But not that it is known as an object. I consider it as known, but not that it is known as an object. It is both known and unknown. Okay? Both known and unknown means it is self-evident as me, as the mind of the mind, as the set chit that the mind, the conscious being which the mind enjoys, but it is not known as an object of the mind, right? It is the conscious being which the ears enjoy, the ear of the ears, but it's not known by what the ears can do as a sound. It can't do that. Brahman is not a sound. It's the eye of the eye, you know? Brahman is the eye of the eye, the shrota, the chakshushas chakshuhu. It's not an object of the eye. It's not something that can ever be objectified. It is the conscious being because of which the mind is objectified, the sense organs are objectified, all the sense organs, that the whole universe is objectified, but it itself is a different order of reality. It's not an object of reality, right, that can be within samsara. It's not the vyavaharika satyam. It's mitya. All of this in here is mitya. It's something that within mitya, within this creation, subject-object relationship definitely applies, right? All of your sense organs have their corresponding objects within the world. That's how we gain knowledge. And our mind, of course, is the one that uses all of the sense organs to gain all of these vrittis that have content, but the content always is something that exists within duality. How can the self, yourself, the consciousness that illumines the mind, be an object of the sense organs or the mind? It's not possible. And yet, consciousness, me, is the very mind of the mind and the ear of the ear. See what I mean? And the eye of the eye. They say that because we don't want you to think, or the Upanishad doesn't want you to think, that consciousness is somewhere over here, you know, shining, illumining from outer space somewhere, illumining the eyes from a distance. There's no distance between conscious being and the sense organs or the mind, but the mind is not going to be objectified. And so now look at this situation. It's very beautiful, actually. Say now we're going back to the yaksha and then back to the flash of lightning, okay? The flash of lightning takes place. As it takes place, your eyes close, right? Immediately. What happens? Flash of lightning takes place, your eyes close. What that means is that you have the flash of lightning, then the eyes close, and what is left? The flash of lightning is gone. The eyes are closed, so there's no objectification at all taking place. Mm-hmm. At all? Nothing. The flash of lightning is there, eyes close. Okay. And so what is left in that circumstance is the same one exactly that was there when the flash of lightning occurred. Do you see that? The flash of lightning is there. When the flash of lightning is gone, your eyes are closed. There's nothing there except you, your being. So it's like a Mahavakya. Now he goes like this, if you see. Okay, flash of lightning is there. Now say the eyes don't close. The flash of lightning is there and you hold your eyes open, okay? And then the lightning goes away, and now what do you see is sky. Not you, sky. The sky. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, because I was looking at you and I said that I just made that connection. The flash of lightning is there. Your eyes stay open, and now the flash of lightning is not there, but then this other stuff being objectified is there. But say the flash of lightning occurs, that shuts your eyes, and then what is left is me. Is just me, the one who is the adhishtana of both the flash of lightning and the absence of the flash of lightning. So we probably have to do a meditation on this, but it's very, very amazing. Sometimes we've done a meditation of just opening. I mean, I have. I don't know that we've done it here this time, but it's a beautiful meditation of just opening and closing your eyes. You know. Just try it now. If you open your, you have your eyes open, and so there is the, whatever the vision that you're having, whatever forms you're seeing of this room, okay? So you have your eyes open, and then you close. Eyes open, close. Open. Why that's such a beautiful meditation is because nothing happens. In the closing of the eyes, in the absence of all name and form, right? In terms of sight. In that absence of all name and form, the what is essentially there doesn't change in any way. And so it's a beautiful meditation, just like flash of lightning is there, it's not there. Lightning is there, you close your eyes. What is left always in terms of every perception and in terms of the mind, any vritti in the mind, what is always left is the invariable. Remember, this is the whole Kena Upanishad has been, but the variables and the invariables. There's one invariable. The eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the prana of the prana, there's the vak, the speech of the speech. Those are all variables. And they're variables for all of us. For all of us, these one, we have identification with the upadi, but everything about each one of us is a variable. And a variable means it's mitya. What we mean by mitya is it continues to replace, be replaced, be replaced, be replaced. Any perception is replaced by the next perception, by the next, by the next. The waking state is replaced by the dream state, it's replaced by the deep sleep state. The sound, one sound is replaced by another, by another, by another. For all of us in unison, this is continually happening. In unison means the same thing is happening to all of us all of the time. The variables come into being and go out of being, come into being and go out of being. So say if we just talk about this room, there's different rhythms in terms of what our minds are doing or what our sense organs are doing, but the one thing that they all have in common is that they're variables. They come into being and go out of being. Replaced, one situation replaced by the next, replaced by the next, replaced by the next. If that was all that was there, it's just continual replacement. That's all. There's no adhishtana. No adhishtana. What would that situation be like? We can't even explain what it would be like because the one that's explaining would be gone already. You know? But the fact of it is that with this dance of, you know what a variable means? It's the thing that, the variables are those things that are changing continually. The non-variable is that which doesn't change, which is ever-present. That's the non-invariable. The invariable is that, say in terms of our vrittis, our thoughts, the invariable is the one that doesn't change. The variable is that which changes. So think of, if you think the ear of the ear, the invariable is the ear of the ear. The variable is the ear, means the sound. Continually changing, 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 changing. But there's someone there that is invariable. Whether it's speech also. Look at what happens with speech. A speech like a sentence, you know. What if I say, speech is a sentence, you know. Or speech, words form, to make it meaningful, words form a sentence which you hear. Those are all variables, but there has to be an adhishtana in which this string takes place because the words are continually negating themselves. In fact, the letters are continually negating themselves within a word. So something invariable has to be there to allow these variables to have an adhishtana, a reality, a being in which to take place. I am that being. They are coming and going, all of them. They are all coming and going into my being. They arise in my being, they set in my being. My being is the invariable. So my being is me. My being has no distance from my experience. Right, because look, just to ground us, so here's our experience right now. The sound is taking place. These words are taking place. These perceptions are taking place. My body is there with all of its whatever it's contributing. My mind and its, you know, wandering about is there. It's just a whole variegated experience. And there's me. It's not like there's a variegated, you know, variegated means multidimensional with many things happening at the same time. So there's this multidimensional variegated experience taking place in a variegated me. No, it's not a variegated me. I am the invariable. I am the one whom all of these changes are taking place. So now, if I close my eyes just in terms of what I see, if I close my eyes, right, I close my eyes, then what happens is for that moment, lightning flash, just blink. It says not close my eyes, really, it's blinking. So I just want you to appreciate this. So here's the lightning flash. You see it. And you immediately blink. Okay? When you blink, at that moment of blinking, the only thing cognized at that time is the invariable. So think of this. Okay. This, I want you to see it because it's really neat. You have a vritti of the lightning flash. The lightning flash takes place like that. Okay. And as it takes place, you close your eyes. When you close your eyes now, the lightning flash also has gone, right? So the lightning flash itself, which is cognized, you see it. It takes place, it's gone. And it's gone from two forms. It's gone, and your eyes close. What is the experience when the eyes is closed? It is not like going to deep sleep, right? Because the mind hasn't gone into unmanifest condition. Like it does into pure ignorance. It's awake. It's an awake mind now without anything to objectify. The same thing that we do in japa. We can talk about that later. There's nothing there now to objectify because the lightning took, lightning is a big thing. It took all your attention. You made your eyes close. Now the only thing there is me. It's the self. That's the experience that's there. So, now, just going for a minute, going back to the story, if you're with me on this. When Indra approaches Brahman, which the Ishwara, which is in the form of the Yaksha, who's wanting to teach him, he's recognized as somebody who wants to know the truth of the Yaksha, which is the truth of myself, really. Because this is Adidaivata, so he wants to know the truth of this whole thing. What's the truth of this Yaksha? So he approaches the Yaksha. Brahman, Ishwara, is very clear. Ishwara is the first teacher. He's very clear that there's no way for any of us, including Ishwara, to see Brahman. Brahman can only, you are Brahman. You cannot objectify Brahman in any kind of words. The Yaksha, you can't objectify Brahman as Ishwara. You are Brahman. You are self-evident, conscious, me, which is Brahman. So what happens? As Indra, who wants to know the truth of the Yaksha, as he approaches, Brahman disappears. He makes the Yaksha, he just disappears. Now, when he disappears, what happens to Indra? Indra just stays there, not knowing really what to do. He stays there and waits. Because the Yaksha, who was there for the other two, you know, was there, but for Indra, it just disappears. So Indra humbly, as Swamiji will say, very kind of humbly, with hands like this, just waits. And then the Yaksha, Brahman, now appears again. Ishwara now appears again as Uma, as a beautiful goddess devata called Uma. She's the daughter of Himavat, the Himalayas, and she, Uma, is considered an embodiment of Brahmavidya, as the story goes. And so now Brahmavidya in the form of Uma. Remember we talk about the Shastra, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, as the Mother Shruti. Because so much love and so much compassion, so much patience, that the Mother Shruti will always take care of you in giving you this knowledge. So Uma appears, Brahman appears in the form, Ishwara appears in the form of Uma, who is the Brahmavidya. It's really like the Upanishads. And she then, and to her, to Brahmavidya, Indra says, Who is that Yaksha? And Uma says means teaches, and how we translate that, Uma reveals to Indra Brahman. Reveals to Indra Brahman, certainly not as an object, but through the Brahmavidya. And so Brahmavidya means the knowledge of Brahman. And the Upanishads are, what are the Upanishads? They are Brahmavidya. And so the point here is that that knowledge is not something that, that your sense organs and your mind can possibly give you. You know, you are that. And so you are, with or without knowledge, you are self-evident conscious being. You don't have to be a jnani to have the aparoksha, for Brahman to be aparoksha, because Brahman is self-evident. You have to be a jnani to have aparoksha jnanam. Not an yourself is aparoksha. The self of the jnani is the same, is the self of Ishwara, is the self of the ajnani, is the self of the asura, is the self of the deva, is the self of the animal, is the self of all beings. And that's not a hidden self. It's not, it, that's not a, let's put it this way, that is, the self is always self-evident, whether you have knowledge or not. So you don't have knowledge, so I don't know if I have a self or not. Where is my self hidden? That's, no. It is so self-evident that we totally take myself for granted. I'm not searching for myself, I am myself. But I am myself in the form of this body, mind, sense organs. I am myself. I have to become a mumukshu when I say, who am I really? What is this really about? Am I really this body, or is there something about me that survives death? Now I'm on a different track. I'm becoming a mumukshu who wants to know. Indra was a mumukshu, a jignyasu, who wants to know. And so, for what will Ishwara do? Give him Brahmavidya. So he gives Uma, the goddess of Brahmavidya, and she reveals the nature of Brahman, that yaksha, who that yaksha is. That yaksha is only Brahman. The Brahman, you know, who won the, whose victory you were all celebrating. Is that Brahman? The one whose victory, Ishwara, the one whose victory you are all celebrating. That is that Brahman. Yeah. And then Ishwara, I mean, Indra was so happy, he went back pleased, and he taught Agni and Vayu. And then they understood. It's probably for a lot of teaching. And then they taught the rest of the devas. So this lightning, nimishat, this lightning in the blink, you have to practice it. You see lightning, shut your eyes. And what is there is the reality. You see the namarupa, shut your eyes. The namarupa is not there. What is there? The adhishtana. Yeah. And he recognized, with the help of Uma, he recognized that. It made perfect sense to him. So now you're now for the rest of the day until the next class, and I'll go around. Recognizing the true, beautiful truth of it. The thing is that it is so simple that we have to teach so long to make it clear, because it's too simple. One time, Swamiji in India, it must have been in 1973, when I'd just been there for a little while, like 3 or 4 months, and he took us for this long walk. We were up at Puranajadi in the Himalayas at his ashram there, and he was teaching a lot of the students, mostly Indians. But he took us on a walk where there was going to have a big bonfire, and so he took, and it was at night, so we went on this walk, and we were all sitting around the bonfire, and for some reason, based upon his talk, I don't remember the details, I said something, this knowledge is really simple, isn't it, Swamiji? Because he was peeling back the complexity so much, and I was starting to understand that. And he said, yes, and that is exactly the problem. It is too simple for us. It is too simple to recognize that the reality of myself is right here as I am right now. And that, in fact, every vritti, every thought, every experience I have has no distance from me at all. In fact, the vrittis, the thoughts, can never even cover me. They don't cover me at all, you know. It's like the clay doesn't cover, the pot doesn't cover the clay. You don't need to have the vrittis all go away so that you can peek behind the scenes to see yourself. You're the non-variable. You're the invariable, the self that is never not present, no matter what the vritti is. The vrittis come and go and come and go. You're the invariable. And there's no distance between you and any experience to think that you have to get rid of the experience to have an experience of yourself. You're the very adhishtana of every vritti that's there. There's a famous story that goes, I think it's Ganesha and somebody else are having a race to the moon. Yeah. Of course, Ganesha's kind of plodding along there. You know, it's kind of like the hare and the turtle, you know. Who's going to get there? Who's going to get to the moon first? You know, who gets to the moon first? And so all the one has to do is look at the moon. You just need to look at the moon. You're there first. You're always there first because yourself is already yourself has already won the race. Wherever you look, wherever you go, yourself is there. So say you think, okay, I have an infatuation with the moon. Okay, I just can't get my mind away from the moon. How am I ever going to bring my mind back to myself? That's too far. How will I bring my mind back? You don't have to bring your mind back. Just recognize yourself with the moon. You don't have to bring your mind back from anything. It's not wherever your mind is, yourself is. Right? Wherever the mind is, yourself is. So say you think, well, I have to somehow travel back here, you know, so that then I can recognize myself as though myself's in my body or something. Wherever your vritti is, yourself is. You see that? So when are you not in, this is a Shankara in the Aparokshana Buddhi. When are you not in samadhi? When are you never not there as the adhishtana, as the me of your mind? When? Whether you're doing inner child work, or you're meditating, or you're taking a walk, or you're having an intense conversation with your friend, when are you not there? What is the distance between the vrittis and you? There's no distance at all. So how long does it take in any situation for you to recognize yourself? Say your mind is like spinning around, you know, concerned about something. How long does it take to recognize yourself? It doesn't take any time. As long as you know yourself and that viveka is there, it takes no time. No time. Because you're already there. How long does it take to, in an experience in which you're the adhishtana, you're the satchit, the conscious being, the me of the experience, how long does it take for you to recognize yourself in that experience? You're already self-evident, first of all, so you don't even need the mind to be you. But say your mind is losing itself in its raga dvesha. All it has to do is stop for not even a second. It's not even stopping. It can be... And you recognize, and the focus shifts to yourself. It doesn't even need to shift. That's the thing. We have to practice this. Because all of the words, none of the words are good enough. You know? It's not even that it has to shift. Why doesn't it have to shift? Because you're self-evident. You don't require the mind. You don't require the mind to be you, to have your own self-experience. The mind can go. The whole universe can go. The entire universe can go. And you're just you, just this me. Self-evident. And so self-evident you doesn't require the mind to be paying attention to you. If it's paying attention to you or not, you're self-evident you. You just have to recognize that. That ajnanam that has caused all these things to being superimposed on you, that viveka has to take place. But with the viveka taking place, the viveka is taking place, now do we have to, you know, kind of, okay, now we can look at the self. No, it's not now we can look at the self. You are the self. You'll never be able to look at the self. You can only be self-evident me, which you have always been, but this knowledge pulls off these misidentifications. The next story, the next verse is another example from the adhyatma, from the standpoint of yourself. So that'll be good. Finish off the problem.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Hari Om.